I am Linda von Tilburg for BizNews, and with me I have immigration specialist Andrew Rissick, the Group International Director of Sable International, with me. We're going to talk about the National Health Insurance Bill and what effect that has on immigration, and also a couple of other issues like visas for Europe and the US EB-5 visa. Hi, Andrew, again. Welcome to BizNews.
Thanks very much. Always good to be on your show and chatting to the tribe, as Alex always refers to them as.
They are the tribes. So can we start off with the National Health Insurance Bill that Cyril Ramaphosa, the president, just signed? Does that have an effect on the people knocking on your door?
Yeah, look, I think they've been speaking about the NHI for a long time, and it's like everything, politicians sort of start alluding to something and then, you know, it's a long process and it sort of softens people up. But I think the reality is in South Africa, what we've learned over the past three decades is what we think is unthinkable often becomes reality, because these guys are on a mission. It is very much part of their policy and it's now in law. There's obviously the debate as to whether it's been signed in just before the election. I had an interesting drive back from Hermanus 2 days ago listening to the president being interviewed by, I think it was KFM or Cape Talk. And he was saying that this wouldn't change anybody's will to get up and go and vote. But who knows? We've had a lot of phone calls. We've had phone calls from the health worker fraternity are obviously concerned, because that's to do with their future and how they get remunerated and what their careers look like. But actually, for people who are probably starting to think about what retirement looks like, where healthcare becomes a really important consideration, we've had a few interesting conversations with clients inquiring about what the healthcare options are in other parts of the world.
Well, what are they? Are there options, better healthcare options in other parts of the world that's not going to cost you the earth?
Yeah, I think healthcare it's becoming such a global issue now. And I think we saw it with the COVID pandemic and the World Health Organization and Big Pharma. It is, healthcare is a massive industry. But apart from that, I mean, the reality is every single one of us is going to at some stage need healthcare. And I think just to start off by saying that healthcare is very expensive in South Africa. So in a way, the government does have a point, because to make good medical services sort of accessible to the broader population of South Africa is almost impossible, because in global terms, our healthcare is very expensive. If you compare the premiums that people like us would be paying in South Africa versus people in the UK for private medical, I'm talking about, and places like Portugal and Malta, it really is very high. So it's, again, it just comes down to that economic conversation of how many people are contributing and how many people are sort of, you know, are benefiting from the system. And I think that's where the concern comes with the NHI. But in Portugal, for instance, if you residents in Portugal, or even a country like Malta, where, you know, we have the ability to help a client actually get access to go and live there through investment or another type of visa, your healthcare, private healthcare, is more of a top-up to really good government healthcare. Because if you're a legal resident in most European countries, you have a right as a resident to have access to the government health services. So Portugal particularly and Malta are renowned for having really good medical. But if you want a top-up, you take out private cover, much like in the UK, and it's actually very affordable. So for between 500 euros and 1,000 euros a year, you can take comprehensive medical cover that complements what the government would give you. So that's a pretty good comparison. South Africa, that's probably what you're paying per month.
So I'm quite interested, are people actually immigrating because of their healthcare options? Is that actually a driving factor?
I don't think it's a driving factor yet, because I think it's too new. And you know, what you're reading in the press is a lot of people are saying, this is going to be tied up in litigation for the next 8 to 10 years. But I think what's happening is we're just delaying the inevitable. You know, what we've seen consistently over the last 30 years is a lot of wealthy people moving their wealth out of the country. They're hedging. They still want to live here. What you don't really want happening is that all your medical practitioners start leaving or feeling doubtful about their future. But, you know, if that trend does start to pick up, and it's already happening, I mean, we're seeing medical people leaving. You know, at the end of the day, who's going to be servicing you if you're a retiree in South Africa, where you've decided you're going to retire and live in a nice security estate and have a private medical? You know, those are the concerns. So I think what we're seeing more and more recently is people asking, if I move to this country, what does the medical look like? You know, but I think this is a work in progress, and I think we're going to see a trend.
Well, we've talked about, you know, healthcare workers thinking, you know, I don't have freedom of choice anymore with the new laws. Have you had doctors who are, a lot of doctors who want to move elsewhere because of this?
Yes. Over the years, it's more anecdotal than necessarily seeing a trend. But I had a conversation a couple of years ago with a guy who heads up one of the big medical companies here, private medical companies, and they were actually looking at creating a Plan B incentive as part of the package for their medical professionals, so that they didn't feel the need to leave South Africa and go and look for a plan outside of SA. So it was more to say, if you come and work for us, you know, we can help facilitate a golden visa to, say, for instance, Portugal. Create a Plan B for yourself and your family, but you don't need to leave the country, because that's the whole idea of a Plan B. Because medical people, exactly like all of us, we're just concerned about what the future looks like. And I think uncertainty is something that we've lived with forever in South Africa, but the future does start to look more and more uncertain. And I think your average medical doctor is a person who's invested an enormous amount of time in their career, and they want certainty. So I think it would be good if we could offer that to them. But if not, they will definitely go abroad and go and look for other opportunities. The one thing that makes it quite difficult is that if you're a doctor here and you move to, say, Portugal, you have to go through a conversion. You can't just go and start practicing. So that is a bit of a barrier to their exit from SA.
Yeah, and even in the UK, you have to write x-ray exams. Yeah. So what about the golden visa? A lot of doors have closed. What options are there now?
Yeah, the what we refer to as the investment migration industry. So that's where one can get either residency or citizenship through investment. It's been a very, very turbulent couple of years. I think we saw in February 2022, the British government closed down the Tier 1 investor visa. So that's where you could buy the right to permanent residence through investing £2 million into government bonds. Then a year later, we saw the Irish Investor Program closing down. That was very popular with clients of ours, and that could have been either a Plan A or a Plan B. So that was a very nice opportunity. And then recently, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen the Australian government shut down their investor program. So those are three English-speaking countries that have basically closed the door to anybody accessing residency through investment. So the only real option that we see now in the investor space to go to an Anglo-Saxon or English-speaking country is the US via the EB-5 investor program, which is actually the oldest one in the world. And still seems to be going strong.
Well, let's go just through that one. What do you need for that? And what do they offer?
The princely sum of $800,000 US. So just to give you some context, 30 years ago when the EB-5 was first launched, and this was the first investor program, you know, in the world, and it was $500,000. And about 3 or 4 years ago, they changed the threshold to bring it more in line from an inflation perspective. And they'll probably start indexing it every couple of years so that we don't get sort of lagged behind again. But $800,000 US, you can invest through a regional center they're basically government-approved job creation schemes. And then what happens is within a year or two, in fact, it's probably taken 2.5 years until you get your green card. But then you and your family can actually physically emigrate to the US, and it gives you all the rights that a normal US citizen has. The only thing is that you can't vote. So let's say you invest through a regional center in California, you can go and live in New York, you can go and live anywhere. You can work, you can run a business, you can basically, you get access to all the local rates for education if you've got children at either school or university. So there are lots of benefits, but it's a full-on relocation. I'm leaving South Africa and I'm moving to the US.
So what are the options for non-English speaking countries? You mentioned Malta earlier.
Yeah, so Malta, I mean, Malta's English is their sort of one of their first languages, because the other one is Maltese. But English is obviously an official language in Malta. But then in non-English, you've still got Portugal, which is still popular. It's not as popular as it was because the real estate investment category has disappeared, as you probably know. But there is an option if you invest into funds that you can still get residency in Portugal. That's always a good one, because that can be used as a plan A or a plan B, because you can actually, it's the only European route to actually getting citizenship without having to leave your destination country. So that's still the big benefit of Portugal. It does take long, though. From inception to getting your citizenship, you're probably talking about 8 years. But the good thing is that you don't need to relocate. So if you know, if South Africa is where you're making your money and this is your home and where your kids are being educated, that's still a really good option. Greece is another great option, but that's residency never leads to citizenship, and underpinned by a real estate investment. And that's actually fairly popular at the moment.
And I've also seen that a lot of countries are starting these nomad visas and also retirement visas where you can come and live there. I don't know if it leads to citizenship, but there seems to be other options.
There are definitely other options. The nomad visa, I think they're not quite as popular right now as they were probably 2 years ago. And anecdotally, my experience in Portugal, many people went to Portugal on nomad visas and they were working for big American corporates. A lot of them have actually been retrenched, because we've seen a sort of tightening in the IT sector. It's not as buoyant as it was probably a year or two ago, just, you know, shortly after COVID. And, you know, I think the whole work from home and the remote working trend, whilst it's very much part of our lives going forward, I don't think it's as popular as what everybody thought it would be. So the uptake and the nomad visas don't lead to citizenship. So the nomad visa is very specifically to attract a younger talent into a country and to give them a place to come and sort of almost locate just to work remotely. Retirement visas are very interesting. And the one very compelling retirement visa is Portugal, because that gives you the right to go and work in Portugal. I mean, to go and live in Portugal permanently. There's no capital investment required. And one can then become a citizen after naturalizing after 5 years. You can then apply.
So what do you
places
need?
Greece?
Yeah.
Sorry, Linda.
What do you need for that? For, say, the Portuguese one, would you need to have earn a certain amount of money or have an investment or pension?
Yes, you need to prove that you've got a passive income of at least 1,000 euros a month. You know, so it's not that difficult to do. But we have a very interesting product where we've created a sort of a retirement package where you invest in a property, and then part of it is we'll handle all the immigration, the tax immigration from South Africa, the inward immigration into Portugal, as well as any tax structuring that you require. And then we're also building out some exciting products around medical insurance and life insurance in Portugal as well. Because we've noticed over the last 4 or 5 years, it's become a very, very popular destination for South Africans, where their kids and now grandkids are possibly living in Europe or the UK with no intention to return home. So a good place to consider. Greece has a good retirement option. The only difference is that it doesn't lead to citizenship. So you're very welcome to go down to Greece and retire and live a lovely life, that you will always be on a permanent resident basis rather than as a national.
Is there anything else we need to cover that you wanted me to ask you? Because I think you gave a nice rundown of what you said, and we talked about the Australian. Do you want to say more about the Australian one? Is there
Australia's closed now?
It's closed now. Yes, really.
Yeah.
Okay, look, Australia's done.
We're going into a polarized world where there's a sort of, what do they call it? The deglobalization.
Yep, where countries are all closing the doors.
Yep.
Yes, we're going into that. But if a big war breaks out, people might want to rush back. That's not on the record.
I'm telling you, South Africa, that's why I live here half the time. It's a flipping great place.
Okay, I'll ask you one more question.
Yes.
Is there a wait and see to see for people who might have considered it, but first want to see who's the new government? Is the ANC going to be in government with, if they climb into bed with a really left-wing party, that might also, again, lead to an exodus?
Yeah, interesting question. And I think that's a great question. We've seen a definite wait and see across all of our clientele. Leading up to this election. And I was in Mpumalanga 2 weeks ago, and the mood up there is interesting because it's changed so much since 1994 that, the people there just get on with their lives. They're all hustling. And, the ANC's been running that place for ages. The place where I see the biggest anxiety is in the Western Cape because it's almost like the inevitable is just being delayed in the Western Cape. And everyone's just hoping that the DA will hang into power because, of course, it's not just a national election. I mean, this is a provincial election as well. So I think there is a lot of fear and anxiety, should I say. I think that once we see 2-3 weeks' time who's in charge at provincial and national level, I think it will be very telling. And I think we'll start seeing people making decisions again.
Andrew Rissick from Sable International, thanks so much.
Linda, thank you.